Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a very busy week in the Capitol, but first, wish I was there. Congressman, Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan on the potential impeachment of President Trump, the next steps. Megan Wolf of the Elections Commission talks about the first meeting of the Election Security Council. Alex Lazary on how Milwaukee outraised Miami and Houston to get the Democratic National Convention next July, and testimony on how cameras at Milwaukee intersections could catch speeders, drivers who blow through red lights, preventing accidents. Wish I was there.
You know we're in an impeachment inquiry. I think you're going to see all this resolve, depending what comes out of some of the testimony they get in the next few weeks before the end of the year.
So today was the first formal meeting of the Wisconsin Elections Commission's Security Council. The council will help us continue to coordinate our preparations and response planning for the 2020 election cycle.
My grandma was able to vote for the first time in 1972 at the age of 19. After 47 years, she still considered voting a privilege. In conclusion, take the time to learn about who is campaigning so we don't lose our freedom.
Milwaukee went up against two of the biggest cities in the country. We raised double the amount of money that Houston and Miami was able to raise. And I think that really showed everyone we can do it and we can go up against anyone.
We've got pilots that are of the age of 65 retiring in mass numbers. Another thing that's fueling this pilot shortage crisis, our Gen Xers, Gen Z, they don't really want to be airline pilots.
Cities that have installed red light cameras have seen a 21% decrease in fatal red light running accidents and have 14% fewer crashes at all types of signalized intersections.
This year in Arizona, a woman who was in a vegetative state was raped by her caregiver. The care facility where this incident occurred instituted a policy similar to this legislation before you this afternoon. Male staff are not allowed to enter a female patient's room unless accommodated by a female employee. Wisconsin should be the leader in instituting this policy for our state facilities.
Because Wisconsin law does not currently cover many types of animal sex abuse that actually occur, prosecutors may be forced to charge an offender with a crime other than bestiality. Under AB 152, the crime of sexual animal abuse and exploitation becomes a felony, as it should.
As you and I have repeatedly said, we're not lawyers, but we've got to spend some time today on three items involving lawyers. First of all, last week the Supreme Court issued an order. They will take the challenge to the governor's vetoes.
Yes.
Right. And you and I looked at the order. It was issued to Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty. Mm-hmm. There was what I found curious, J.R., before we talk about the merits of this, there was no indication of how these seven justices voted. Sometimes there is.
Not that I saw. But what I'm watching for in this case is whether the Supreme Court is going to reverse 40 years of precedent. In 1978, the court basically said that the governor has a pretty powerful veto pen.
Yes.
This case is arguing that Evers is creating new policy without the legislature getting a chance to weigh in on it. They're singling out four vetoes. One, for example, took a pot of money that the legislature, Republicans, wanted to have go just to road projects.
Yes.
Evers changed it to a pot of money that could be doled out to transit projects, which includes like bus services, for example. Also changed a fee on truck registrations and some other things. This lawsuit saying, look, that goes beyond the power of the governor. Now, for 40 years, I've seen governors do much more than that.
Vanna White until it was fixed. Oh, yeah.
Now, that's not an issue.
Tommy's vetoes made water run uphill. Until we had these two amendments.
Okay. Voters have restricted that power, but the power is still quite vast.
Yes.
And has done things well beyond what Evers did. That said, we have a new state Supreme Court compared to what we had 41 years ago, obviously. It's a 5-2 conservative majority. When I've been asking people about this decision this week about to take this, the betting money is they're going to overturn those vetoes and say he went too far.
Just those vetoes, because they could rule narrowly. Excuse me, just these four vetoes challenged. But you're saying they're going to issue a ruling that would have the effect of overturning decades.
If I had to bet my mortgage payment next month and how it's going to come down, I would bet they overturn the vetoes. What I don't know is how far the court would go. And I've been asking about this again because I'm not a lawyer, so I ask people who are. If you look at the rulings recently and opinions from that court, again, it's a 5-2 supermajority, but Justices Rebecca Bradley and Daniel Kelly have indicated in other cases that they're willing to take a stand and say, look, we need to re-examine the relationship between the executive and legislative branch. I'll go back to the decision in the administrative rulesmaking process. The court had just a few years ago, in kind of an odd decision, and I say odd because it wasn't clear 4-3 black and white majority. It was a little bit more of a complicated
decision. Are you talking about the DPI case?
Administrative rules saying basically that the court changed a ruling from just a few years earlier saying that the state superintendent,
as a constitutional officer,
did not have to submit its administrative rules to the governor.
Right.
The court said, no, we're going to make you do that. That's a change. And it became clear cases like that at least those two, if not more, believe there should be a more restricted executive branch because they see a bleeding of the executive powers to legislate, essentially.
Okay, well, but let's talk about some history here. In the case of Act 10 and the other challenges to the governor's veto authority, lower courts, circuit court, and court of appeals were allowed to decide. In this order this week, the court said, no, we're not going to let the circuit court of appeals, we're taking it directly. Why?
A couple of things I heard this week. One is that the circuit court is more of a fact-finding body. So you hear all the both sides, grab all the facts, make a decision. The appeals court is largely bound by Supreme Court precedent. So the argument I heard was if you're the state Supreme Court, you're basically delaying getting this case by a year, 2 years, maybe three, by letting it go to the lower courts first. And if you do that, the effect of Evers' vetoes will be well in place by the time Supreme Court weighs in on this case. So this speeds up the process because you're only going to get there eventually, so why not grab it?
Well, okay, but again, we're not lawyers. Let's keep saying that. But these lower cases, Circuit Court and Court of Appeals, build a record on which the Supreme Court is then asked to arbitrate.
And don't forget, this is not the first time this court has agreed to take a case from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
I can see that.
On direct appeal. Now, liberals have raised Cain to me about this because Justice Bradley, Rick Essenberg, who was over Will, I think he's the president, he was a recommendation for Bradley when she got the appointment to the bench by Scott Walker. Daniel Kelly, I believe, was a senior advisor to Will. I mean, there are some ties here between the group pushing these viewpoints and people on the bench, and liberals think it's unseemly.
Well, you're not predicting how the court's going to rule, are you?
No, my question is, I think the people I talked to this week feel like the fact the court took this case is a sign of where it might be going.
Okay.
Plus, you add in what we just saw in the administrative rules case, what we've seen from the sometimes concurring opinions from Justice Bradley and Justice Kelly, that they've shown a sign they're looking to rein in the executive branch and preserve the authority of the legislative branch.
Okay, second legal development this week. There was a legislative committee hearing on a constitutional amendment that would say no governors can, as Governor Evers did, to increase school aids, write up an appropriation of the legislature. Let's listen to Senator David Craig explaining why Senator Craig thinks this change is needed. Please.
I, along with Representative Kuglich, have drafted the State Budget Protection Act, which is a resolution to reinforce the legal tenet that the partial veto provision in the Wisconsin Constitution prohibits the governor from using a partial veto to increase expenditures in any appropriations bill that has already been enrolled, that is passed by both the houses of the legislature. By passing this resolution, the legislature will continue the historic trend to prevent gubernatorial intervention into the legislature's purview, regardless of which party holds the executive branch. And this would shield taxpayers from further unauthorized spending increases in the future.
Another issue that deals with the governor's veto authority. Proposed constitutional amendment saying no governor, Democrat, Republican, Whig, whatever, can write up an appropriation of the legislature. It's a long way from becoming law. I don't think this committee voted on it, correct?
No, it has to pass back-to-back legislative sessions and then go to a statewide referendum. The earliest I think that could happen, let's say it passes this year or next year.
Yes.
They could take it up again in early 2021 and maybe get it on the ballot in April. It's a very narrow window to do that.
Yeah.
But the earliest I think it happened would be in 2021. What I don't know about this one is the lawsuit from Will is an immediate threat to governor's veto authority. This is more of a long-term one and would cross party lines.
Yes.
What I also kind of look at with this one is there are 13 GOP state senators who are co-sponsors of the amendment. There are 19 members of that caucus, right? When I look at the names who are not on that, you see people who are part of the more moderate wing of the caucus, but around for a longer time have seen both Republican and Democratic governors back and forth. The reason I bring that up is I'm wondering, will those more moderate members get on board with this amendment? Because, you know, sometimes there are people who've been around for a long time and more institutionalists who go, look, you know, this makes me uncomfortable. I just don't know if they'll raise an objection.
View it from a longer lens.
I mean, look, Evers, typically a governor, even with the powerful veto pen that he or she has, cannot just go in and write, like, if it's $100 million, cross it out and make it $200 million. You can't just write up an appropriation. But Evers found a way around that because what he did was he crossed out numbers to create a bigger per pupil payment increase.
Yes.
Because you have to meet that formula increase, it drew more money in. It's a unique way to do it. Also a rare way to do it, to get around that limit on writing up an appropriation.
Right. And this was the reaction from a key Evers aide to this committee hearing. The GOP is upset the governor uses broad veto authority to provide more money for schools, as you just said. Republicans instead should get to work on pressing issues facing our state. So we don't know how quickly either Senate or Assembly is going to move on this, and whether it's going to get its first round ratification by the end of this session.
No, but part of the push for this is that there is an imbalance in power between the two houses, I mean, or two branches of government, because of how powerful his veto has been. I mean, it's been that way for years. I mean, we are unique that we have this broad of a veto, partial veto authority for a governor. It applies to any spending bill. So I've heard complaints before from lawmakers of we're disadvantaged. Now, the answer is you can override the veto. But the reality is we haven't had a veto overridden since
1985.
So,
and Tony Earle.
We don't see them happen very often. So right. Barring a supermajority in both houses of legislature after the 2020 elections,
right,
the Republicans won't have an opportunity to override Evers' veto, most likely. There's always a chance we would get some Democratic votes, but most likely, this is one way to try and address that imbalance.
Okay, third topic involving lawyers. You really got deeper in the weeds than me on this. So, Will, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, has filed a complaint against the Elections Commission on the concept of movers. Now, I'm just going to talk about what the complaint alleges, and then you can put it in context. The complaint: Elections Commission must send notice to movers, and you're going to define those. Voters have 30 days to affirm their address. If voter does not respond, commission must change the status to ineligible. But the Elections Commission, according to the complaint, set different timetable, 12 to 24 months before flagging a voter as mover. Take it away, because you're really inside this. A mover's what?
Somebody who moves, changes addresses.
Okay, but how does it show up in terms of
You see a transaction that they move. Look, this is getting back to that power issue, okay? Talk about the balance of power between the executive and legislative branch. Now we're talking about a similar thing, the power between the legislative branch and an executive agency, right?
Yeah.
Because Elections Commission is an agency. It is interpreting the law and saying, okay, we believe the window is this big. Will is saying, no, legislature want a window to be this big, and you're going beyond your authority. Basically, you are legislating by taking this view and ignoring what the lawmakers wanted.
Okay. And Rick Essenberg, as you said, president of Will, political appointees and unelected staff do not have the authority to invent or amend policy contrary to state law. Whatever the intent of the Election Commission's action is, it is illegal. Now, yesterday, the Election Commission put out a statement saying we are confident we're acting within the law. And this is on the agenda for the December 2nd commission meeting.
Yeah. And don't forget, with Will, this group ramped up its staff after Evers won. It has become kind of like its mission has been to kind of challenge the Evers administration and the executive branch and what it's doing.
They have added a lot more staff. Mm-hmm. They filed a lot more lawsuits. They're becoming a lot more proactive.
Absolutely.
Okay, new subject. The Assembly Committee. Task Force on Water Quality. They held, I think, 14 hearings in 10 different cities. I had a chance to interview the two co-chairs, and they both agreed that they're looking at a crisis here after all their meetings. So let's hear from both co-chairs, Todd Novak and Katrina Shanklin, just an overview on how big the problem is. Are we in a crisis, Representative?
I believe we have a public health crisis, yes. I think when you have one in four people in certain parts of Portage County, one in four, one in two and five actually in some places in southwest Wisconsin, one in three in some places in northeast Wisconsin, that tells me this is much greater than just a few people with urgent needs.
We're just starting, and that's what I wanted to make clear, is what we're coming out with is a start. What we can't all do this time, we're going to keep on this. Now, we're going to have to address PFAS. 60% of PFAS are food-related items. The coating on pizza boxes and things like that, clothes. So the chances are, if the three of us take a blood test right now, we have some level of PFAS in our body. Most people do.
Task Force Chairman Novak said if you and I had our blood tested, PFAS would show up in it. That was kind of chilling to me. So some of the recommendations, we don't know a lot about PFAS. In fact, one of the as you were just saying, the governor now has endorsed water quality recommendations from three state agencies, Health, Ag, and DNR. And let's just talk about PFAS, because one of those recommendations is that the state should begin a clean sweep program collecting PFAS in firefighting foam equipment from fire departments. So these recommendations are, there's like 8 pages of them.
Yeah.
They're very costly. They're out there, but some of these other things that the coaches are talking about, worsening level of nitrates, bacteria readings found in rural areas, we've been watching those numbers, those test numbers, lead-lined pipes, Milwaukee, remember, the governor recommended aid to help replace those, Republicans said no, and again, as the DNR secretary told me, 1 million residents who rely on wells should get them tested annually. They said, Task Force Chair Novak told me that the speaker has promised action on this by the end of the spring session. Mm-hmm. Your take on the whole emerging issue?
One, with the recommendations from the Evers administration, three agencies, don't forget if they get in the part where they're promulgating administrative rules, those rules have to be approved by the legislature. They get a whack at them.
Yep.
And so when you talk about costly steps, Republicans will have a say in whether those things are going to move forward. With the limited amount of time the House has been on the floor, we're not expecting, so far this session, we're not expecting a robust spring floor period, but I do get the impression that this issue is a priority to get something done, because it cuts across, we said before, party lines, geographical lines.
Yes.
You've got wells in southwestern Wisconsin. You've got PFAS up in the Green Bay area. I mean,
in Madison. John Nygren's district.
Yep. It is an issue that cuts across statewide. There are many sources of pollution that have people on edge about what they're drinking, what comes out of the tap. They want to do something proactive, to seem like they're being proactive about this issue.
And Novak told me he does have a commitment from the speaker to act on this by the spring session.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these recommendations that the governor just endorsed, they cost big bucks.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Okay, next topic. Here, let me get organized a bit. Yes, Milwaukee County Executive Abley has gone back on what he said in May and said he's not going to run again. I was surprised. You?
Yes, because he was coasting a re-election. There was not, I don't know if anybody had even seriously filed or even mentioned running against him.
The Journal Sentinel story said he'd been the only one filed.
So what's interesting is Abley is looking at, 9 years, basically, as county executive.
Special election 2011, re-elected in 12 and 16.
I asked people
this week. Beat Senator Chris Larson in 16, excuse me.
Why? The feedback I got from people close to him was he just decided he didn't have the fire to do it anymore. He recently got remarried. He's got 3 daughters.
What about this controversy of tearing down a mansion? That was unpopular.
Building a new house. But look, this guy was going to win re-election easily. I just get the impression he just lost that fire to do it. And if you don't have the fire in the belly, that's the phrase you hear a lot in politics, there's no point in winning a re-election with no opponent and then a year on the road going, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. So credit to him, some people told me, of deciding now I'm not going to run. It gives others the opportunity to decide, do they want to get in this race and run for county executive? and there is going to be any number of people who kick the tires at the very least, who put their names out there as a possible candidate or enjoy the idea of being one for at least a little while.
But 2 years ago, you and I were asking Abe Lee, aren't you a candidate for governor? And he said no. And then he said, I want to seek re-election. And then he's submitted, he's taken soundings on the next county budget, and now he announces no re-election bid. How prominent a lame duck is he?
Well, good question, because, I mean, the term is up, next year the election's in April, so it's not like a long time. I asked people about, Abe Lee's record. I mean, Scott Walker used the county executive's office, Milwaukee County, to as a launching pad to run for governor. He touted regularly how he had kept property taxes down in Milwaukee County. But to critics, that meant that the Milwaukee County budget was a mess when Abe Lee took over because he had to try and get the county back on more solid financial footing. To his credit, people say, his fans, Abe Lee did that. The budget he just submitted, he got a couple of good pieces of news about additional taxing authority from property taxes, healthcare costs being lower than they thought they were going to be. That helped him kind of ease his budget through. There's some challenges coming up from Milwaukee County. The Mitchell Park domes, they are deteriorating. There's an issue there. Abe Lee wants, as well as Mayor Tom Barrett.
Big price tag on the Mitchell Park domes, excuse me.
They both want a 1 cent local sales tax to allow Milwaukee County governments to lower property taxes while paying for infrastructure.
Which would take the permission of GOP legislators who control
not going anywhere.
Senate.
So the next county executive is going to have a difficult, budget possibly. But I was told that wasn't why I stepped away, that he enjoys fixing things. I was told from some people that they don't think he's going to run for anything else. He just wants to go spend time with his family.
What about these leadership political PACs he's established? Leadership Milwaukee, Leadership WI.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget, he's a major donor to a political organization that helps get gay and transgender candidates elected. I think he's a president of the organization. He's put big bucks in those things. So he can still be a force politically. It's just that he's not going to be the one on the ballot, I don't think.
Okay, and combining on the reporting from you and Journal Sentinel, the list of people that are interested, State Senator Chris Larson, Glendale Mayor Brian Kennedy, former head of AFSCME, or was it SEIU?
AFT.
American Federation Teachers?
I think so.
Thanks for the correction. Representative David Crowley, Milwaukee Alderman Cavalier Johnson, Supervisor Sheldon Wasserman, obviously a former member of the State Assembly, and Supervisor Marcellia Nicholson. This is six. Are we going to see
a
long?
I've heard twice as many names as that, if not more. I mean, again, because we're just throwing out names right now because this is such a shock that he's not going to run, and we've prepared for it. Now what? And I asked some people this week, look, Walker was able to win that office and hold it as a Republican in a very Democratic county. Is there a lane right now for Republican? The answer was probably not.
Okay.
Walker, go back, he won in part because of the pension scandal. With the former executive Ament. The people were not very happy about seeing these golden parachutes for public employees. Walker capitalized on that, got in. This is also Scott Walker pre-Act 10, viewed as a Republican, but not like, this conservative icon that he became for a while after the Act 10 fight in Madison. So he wasn't viewed the same way. It's much different atmosphere than now, where we're so much more divided in partisan lines. Partisanship is up. It's really difficult to see a Republican winning this office this spring, so it's really about who can kind of best resist him or herself as a leading progressive/Democratic candidate.
Final question. Democratic Senator Lena Taylor has announced that she would challenge Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. Do you think she will rethink that and consider county exec?
I haven't talked to her, but I haven't seen any signs yet she's going to switch races, so we'll see.
Understand. Okay, in the 7th Congressional District, where Representative Sean Duffy resigned, two Democrats announced this week. Tricia Zunker is a Wausau School Board President, Associate Justice of the Ho-Chunk Nation Supreme Court. Lawrence Dale announced he made it to the Capitol press room, but he lives in Ironwood, Minnesota. He'd have to move. He's a businessman, Vietnam War vet, and not very well, let's be kind, not well known in the 7th Congressional District.
No, I think he ran for something before, and Green Party candidate. Look, the impression I've gotten is that the Democratic establishment is going to rally around Tricia Zunker. She's kind of more the preferred candidate. Janet Bewley, state senator from up northern Wisconsin, she passed on a run, said she's going to back Zunker. I'm really looking at her as the kind of the leader in the clubhouse for right now for the Democratic nomination.
You don't expect a Democratic primary in the 7th whenever it's held?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, Lawrence Dale's going to run, but if he can get on the ballot, great. But it seems like the folks I talked to are going to rally around Tricia, and she's going to be kind of like the preferred candidate for Democrats.
Okay, and let's just quickly mention the GOP candidates. You have Senator Tiffany, Jason Church, and a businessman, Opella. You expect more to join that?
Not at this point. Tiffany got a big boost with America's Prosperity announcing this morning they're going to endorse him, which means infrastructure. Mm-hmm. AFP has been doing more like the TV ads in the governor's race last year. Tiffany did a lot of canvassing, so they're going to get involved. Tiffany also reported more than $220,000 raised in about 3 weeks, pretty good chunk of change. So he's got a little momentum going for him right now. He's waiting for election date.
And we still don't know when there's going to be an election date.
Yep.
Any minute.
Waiting for, I keep checking every day.
Okay. We got about 3 minutes. Let's walk through your stock picks, rising.
So law enforcement benefits, a bill passed and signed into law that adds fallen law enforcement officers to those that local governments have to pay the health insurance premiums for surviving spouses and children up to age 26, I believe it is. This idea has been around for about half a dozen years. It got some momentum this session with some changes. One, they added more professions that could be part of it. Two, they changed how it's going to be funded.
Yep.
And three, some original versions had it retroactive for about 3 decades. This one narrowed down to just to January 1st of 19. We've had 5 officers, unfortunately, in Wisconsin killed in the past year. Yes. That adds some urgency to this getting done.
Okay, and mixed.
So Kevin Nicholson.
Kevin Nicholson ran for the U.S. Senate and didn't win the primary.
Not going to run for the 5th Congressional District as a Republican, and instead endorsed Scott Fitzgerald. Reason why...
In the 5th District.
Yes. In looking at this decision, I mean, Nicholson did poorly in the 5th Congressional District last year in that primary. His strength was western and northern Wisconsin. Southeastern Wisconsin, where... Leah Vukmir was much better well-known, had much stronger credentials as a conservative. He did poorly. He's been trying to rehabilitate that image ever since that 2018 primary loss. He's got a group called No Better Friend to promote the conservative cause. So he really had an opportunity to run if he wanted to. But it would have been a challenge for him in some ways because Fitzgerald, it seems like the kind of leader right now, the front runner for the nomination. Chris Capignan is looking at getting in. Some others are considering it. Like
what
Matt
has Leah
Newman.
Decided?
She's not going to run.
She's out. Thanks for the update.
So it would have been tough, one, to win that primary because of where he did poorly a year ago, and two, Nicholson has his sights set on something bigger and better, statewide run in 2022. Okay. You can't win a seat in the Congress in 2020 and turn around a few months later and run for U.S. Senate
Absolutely
or governor.
Yeah.
So there was probably some self-interest in this endorsement of Fitzgerald because he wants to burnish those credentials. He wants to show that he's part of the team. I'm not sure he's done enough yet from people I've talked to kind of completely close the questions about his credentials. Because remember, he was president of the National College Democrats back in 2000, right?
And so the College Democrats, it's important to say that.
And don't forget that Scott Fitzgerald basically kind of questioned, where has this guy been? In the 2018 primary, now granted, Fitzgerald and Vukmir were colleagues in the state Senate, close. But Fitzgerald was like, where has this guy been? So here you are, maybe earning a chip with somebody who's the front runner right now in that congressional race.
Okay, and we're almost out of time, but this week Fitzgerald announced the endorsement by former Governor Thompson and former Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrell and Paul Farrell, Waukesha County.
Didn't raise
executive.
A whole lot of money, though, compared to Tiffany, though. His race is in August versus Tiffany is going to be any
right.
month.
Okay,
out.
You got 45 seconds on falling.
I'll do less than that. Air pollution, so it's a good falling, all right? So
yes.
A new report from the DNR, air quality is getting better. I think all but 6 counties have reached attainment for air quality standards. Now, those 6 are along Lake Michigan. There's long been a complaint that they're not producing the pollution. It's coming up Lake Michigan from Chicago and northern Indiana. That said, lots of bad things are falling in terms of their presence in the air, so that's good for Wisconsin.
Okay, real quickly, Rebecca Clayfish is resigning her Washington job to come back to Wisconsin.
Too much travel away from her kids, didn't like that.
Yeah, but is the context there that, yes, she's trying to lay the groundwork to run for governor?
Oh, she was laying that groundwork already anyway. It's just from what I was told, the travel is what was really the issue. But she's made clear she's running for governor in 2022, regardless of how this whole thing.
Okay, and one other thing. All 7 U.S. House members from Wisconsin voted to rebuke the president on the pullback out of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And finally, next week, 1:30 on Monday, the state Supreme Court will hear the union challenge to the lame duck laws. That's a big deal?
Yeah, it's the final one out there. So, and the court's already upheld those laws in a different lawsuit. That one was about when the legislature can meet. This is about separation of powers.
Wisconsin and I will be broadcasting that oral argument live. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for October 18th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.